19957, disciplinary counselor Larry Zingarelli. Justice Stratton has recused herself in this case, and we're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Stratton. And Richard Nepper, who is here to the city in the 6th District.
Welcome, Richard Nepper.
Mr. Zingarelli.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm the respondent, Larry Robert Zingarelli. Your Honor, Mr. Chief Justice, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time.
Thank you. This is an unusual situation, and my main point or theme is that two wrongs do not make a right. It's unusual that I'm entitled to practice in front of the Southern District of Ohio and United States Federal District Court by order of a federal judge, but yet I remain suspended in this court. Something is wrong. Something is terribly wrong here. I'm a manic depressive. Another name for this disease is bipolar disorder. And I'm a qualified handicapped individual. I suffer with this disease along with 2 million other Americans. There have been some notable and worthy people who have had this disease. They include Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, Mary Tyler Moore, Senator Eagleton, Charlie Cry, and Eli Kazan. A lot of manic depressive people are bright, talented, capable people who can work well in their chosen job or profession. What is needed to accomplish this, though, is proper medication. I've had this disease since I was 25 years old, when I started working for Bill Brown, who died this year. And my doctors, Dr. Carney, Dr. Marker, and Dr. Pell, advised me to take my medicine whenever a manic cycle was coming on. Unfortunately, that was very bad advice. As Judge Rice put it, I am the victim of horrible doctoring when it comes to the prescribing of medication. However, now, I'm in a better position. I have a psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Charlotte Bobbin, and she instructs me to take my medication twice a day, 450 milligrams twice a day. And although it degrades my organs, and it'll probably shorten my life, it means that I can act more properly at all times. In the last 6 years, I have had no recurrent episode. I think it's important to take a look.
The conduct that's before us here occurred within the last 6 years, did it not?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
So how does your, I appreciate your, you know, your statement about your condition and so forth, but how does, if you're in remission and you, there are statements, of course, in the brief to that point, how then is that mitigation of the conduct that's before us today if you were being effectively treated during that time?
Your Honor, one does not go into remission for manic depression. If you don't go into remission from diabetes, it continues to kill you. You don't go into remission for manic depression.
But you control it with medication.
You can control it with medication, but it's not an absolute control. When an unusual event takes place in your life, like when you've been sitting in your office for 5 years, not expecting to be this far, and expecting to continue with your practice as your attorney's told you, and then when one day all of a sudden, out of the blue, the Supreme Court tells you, stop practicing, you're in the street for 2 years. Believe me, that is a traumatic event. And during the 2 months in which all these new things, these new charges took place, that's within 2 months after I was suspended, I had to notify 200 clients that I could no longer represent them. My wife was in the hospital over the stress. I had children going to school who were being told that their dad was a bad lawyer. when you have that level of stress impacting you in that 2 month window following when the court put me in the street, the stress is sufficiently high that even with medication, even for a person without bipolar disorder, that you may not make perfect judgments. I mean, I hold the property interest in my license quite dear, and I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would be standing here with the court wanting to disbar me today. But the thing that has been missed is what Judge Rice put his finger upon in his decision. The horrible doctrine, go back to your first decision where you make that left-hand turn, where you say, oh, Larry Cingarelli, his doctor said that this was all a result of his disease and so forth, and then all of a sudden, but we're going to punish Larry because we think that he meant to do that. He meant to have a problem. Well, I didn't. There's some other things that Dean talked about. I think one of them is stim, which was offered, I believe, by Justice Roby Resnick. I think you have to take a look at stim. If stim is worthy of 2 year suspension with 1 year off, and he's the kind of person that stole $37,000 from a client, he neglected his client's files, he engaged in every kind of misconduct detrimental to the client, who is paramount for a lawyer. That's when you put first the client, not yourself. If he is entitled to the kind of discipline that he got, then it is incomprehensible that you would want to disbar me, and you shouldn't. I'd also like to focus on due process issues.
Maybe you should also focus on this being not your first disciplinary action. We have a 2 year suspension and then public reprimand for various conduct and then this conduct.
Your Honor?
Is that different from Stidham?
No, it's not.
Same.
When you look at Stidham, his conduct was horrendous. Now, yes, I did have a prior discipline when Dan Close, my office mate, didn't know how to fill out a contract and put the rule in there. And I did get a public reprimand for that, but the point is...
Well, then the two-year suspension.
Let's talk about the two-year suspension, Your Honor. The point about the two-year suspension is that it's built upon sin. It's a bad decision. It's totally inappropriate. It was arrived at with the participation of one of your fellow justices who admittedly told Stanley Ross she didn't like me. Now, under canons 1, 2, and 3 of the judicial canons, I think, in all humble respect to this court, that there was at least a perception that that was not appropriate conduct on her part.
Mr. Zingarelli, we have a problem with your collaterally attacking that decision was made. It's over. And I can assure you that Justice Stratton's participation in that decision is not the reason you got a two-year suspension. So I think you really should go on to use your time more effectively in talking about what's before us today, because you're not going to be persuasive in attacking Justice Stratton here again. So I will do it.
Your Honor, there are other reasons, like you say, that you have to look at the foundation upon which this disbarment is built. If you accept that the two-year suspension was valid in the first instance, then some rational minds might conclude that I could be disbarred. But when you look at what Judge Rice said about the two-year suspension, and there was a problem with doctors and not with Larry, I think that you can't possibly look at the second case without looking at the first, and that's why I focused upon that. Now, there's some other things that have happened in the second case that we should talk about, and that is to what extent were my due process rights violated in appearing before Judge Quinn.
Counsel, what's the predicate act here in your presence?
I'm sorry.
But what is it that you did wrong?
In the second case?
In the case that's before us now.
In the cases before us now, I don't think I did anything wrong, but to review them briefly, there was a Matthews case, which was a PSM. Just what I told the disciplinary council this would be disputed. And that's all it was. There was interaction with Rose Rahoff, where I sat in a meeting for 5 minutes and was present in the meeting with a licensed attorney while she retained 2 other lawyers. She knew that I wasn't practicing law and I had been suspended. There was a meeting with Mr. Keller where I told him I was no longer practicing law and he retained 2 other lawyers. And there was a case involving a check with Christine Blaine.
What were you doing with your time during your suspension?
My time during my suspension, I was employed as a law clerk, first by Dan Close, and second as a law clerk with Dennis McGuire. And we operated under an agreement that was suggested by Charles Kettlewell, a written agreement. I was working as a law clerk. I was taking factual information from new clients. I was doing research, and I was providing oral and written research to Mr. McGuire and Mr. Close on request. I was attempting to follow the rules of the court in not practicing law. I do not believe that I had a duty to tell everybody that I met in the legal profession that I'd been suspended. I told people that I was not practicing law. I was not proud of the fact that I'd been suspended.
Did you have a duty to return a fee to a client after your suspension? When you can no longer represent the client, you have a fee, you can no longer work for them. Do you have a duty, do you think, under the rules to return the unused portion of the fee to the client?
The unused portion, yes, Your Honor, not the whole fee.
And here the board, or the panel of the board, found that 5 months before you finally, I guess, returned the fee, or if you have returned it.
In part.
Part, I guess. Yes.
With respect to that fee, I spoke to Mr. Matthews when he called me. I told him what I believed he had coming back. I offered to pay that. I offered to negotiate with his lawyer. I offered to talk with his lawyer. I offered to resolve it by arbitration. I offered to be fair with him, and I was consulting with my counsel then, Rick Fry, to more carefully review the exact hours. I believe that I did return more of the fee than he was entitled to, and under the circumstances in a very timely fashion.
What kind of case was it, Matthews?
The Matthews case was a 1983 case involving a black man.
What was the cause of action?
There had been a finding by the EEOC that he had been discriminated against based on his race and his employment.
So it was a race discrimination case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Under 4112?
No. It was a race discrimination case under the Civil Rights Act of 1866. The
federal court or state court?
Federal court.
Okay. We have a problem. One of the things that's the problem in that case is that you seem to have been less than honest with the board in having 2 different sheets where you can calculate the hours spent. In both times, it's 8 hours drafting a 8 hours you charge for drafting a complaint.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Matthews' file was this thick. Mm-hmm. It was a huge box of documents. I spent time interviewing him. I spent time interviewing his family. I did another individual, Mr. Billock, who was working for me, spent time, and Mr. Dennis McGuire has sworn in an affidavit that he spent 8 hours drafting the complaint. That's all true. It may not be believable to you, but in a difficult employment case, you want to do a lot of work before you file those cases because courts, as Justice Douglas knows, are quick to throw them out. They're very difficult cases to win, so you need well-crafted documents to do a good job.
Well, I know that.
Are there any other questions? I'll just take it out for my time and worry about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I think he's been grappling with
Yes.
First of all, I'd like to speak about Mr. Signorelli's comments regarding his bipolar disorder. The reason that his comments and his arguments do not work for this court today are, there are three reasons. First of all, Mr. Zingarelli at his hearing, the hearing that we're talking about today, this very case, sat on the witness stand, just Mr. Zingarelli, no expert witnesses. Mr. Zingarelli gave testimony that he was, to use the phrase, in remission, not suffering from the bipolar disorder, although he will always have that, as he said, but he was properly medicated, gave an explanation, as he did today, of how many milligrams he takes, that he gets his blood tested, et cetera, et cetera, that his conduct was not, his disorder was not causing him to act in any particular apparent way. The other problem he has with that argument is that in cases like Cincinnati Bar versus Stidham, Mr. Stidham admitted the misconduct. That's what's missing here. In response to Justice Piper's question, you heard Mr. Zingarelli say, I didn't do anything wrong. Well, you can't make both arguments. You need to admit that you are mentally ill, and you need to admit that the mental illness caused the misconduct. We don't have an admission of misconduct here. Therefore, we cannot have the argument that there is some there should be some special allowance for Mr. Zingarelli because he has bipolar disorder. He has made a number of different references to Judge Rice's decision from the Federal District Court. As this court may or may not be aware, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, represented by the Attorney General of the State of Ohio, has recently been granted a motion to intervene in that case. Magistrate Merz from the Southern District of Ohio issued a recommendation last November, I believe it was, stating that he believed Mr. Zingarelli should be suspended for 2 years with 1 year stay. Judge Rice's decision did not come out until January 3rd of 2000, recommending that he not be suspended at all from practicing federal district courts, whereby we believe that Judge Rice, there are some issues Judge Rice must not be aware of, primarily because disciplinary proceedings in federal court are entirely ex parte by rule. We don't get to participate. They issue a show cause order to the respondent. He sends in whatever he or she wishes the court to see, and they act based on that. Consequently, once we got Judge Rice's decision, we have in fact been granted permission to intervene and have filed a motion for reconsideration. Chief Justice Moyer asked about the refund for Betty Matthews' money. That, in fact, did not occur until 5 months after the suspension. It occurred in July of 1998. Talk a little bit about what Mr. Zingarelli alleges are due process violations. First of all, he raised some issues in his brief about relator's request for his bank records. He has consistently argued that those records should not have been produced. In our opinion, in our initial complaint against him, which was filed in November of 1998, we charged him with commingling of funds under 912. We also charged him with charging a clearly excessive fee. And we also knew in November of 1998 that Mr. Zingarelli maintained only one bank account, no trust accounts. Consequently, we believe that in order to prove those allegations and perhaps to find other problems with his bank account, we needed to see those records. And we did, in fact, ultimately get the records shortly before the hearing, even though Mr. Zingarelli had filed a motion to try and quash the subpoena, which we ultimately issued to Bank One. Regarding his contact after his suspension with individuals like Rose Rehoff, Ben Teller, Betty Matthews, Christine Lang, Mr. Zingarelli gives this court an entirely different version of the events than were given by those individuals at the hearing. Ben Teller talked at the hearing. Ben Teller was respondent's witness, by the way. Ben Teller talked at the hearing about the fact that the respondent, Mr. Zingarelli, went through the fee agreement with him, filled in the blanks. He talked about what his case was about, what would be done for his $500. Yes, there was another attorney sitting there. He had recently been hired by Mr. Zingarelli to work in that office. The fee agreement was signed with Dennis McGuire, who was not even there. Mr. Keller never even met him. Mr. Zingarelli participated in those meetings as an attorney. He continued to practice law after this court ordered him suspended in February. Regarding the work that he did or did not do for Betty Matthews, and frankly, as we said in our brief, He did in fact do some finite number of hours of work for Betty Matthews. We don't know what that is. The file that Mr. Matthews brought to Mr. Zingarelli's office on January 30th was voluminous. I wouldn't say it was as large as Mr. Zingarelli indicated, but it was large. That's what Mr. Matthews brought to Mr. Zingarelli. Mr. Zingarelli thereupon copied that file, and for the next 3 weeks, an individual by the name of David Bilbock, another attorney, worked on Mr. Matthews' file. Mr. Zingarelli did some work. He talked to Betty on the phone. There's no doubt about that. And then Mr. Zingarelli got suspended. He got suspended on February 18th. At that point, the attorney-client relationship ends. It stops. Betty Matthews only had a fee agreement with Larry Zingarelli, not with David Bilbock, not with Dan Close, not with anybody else. So on that day, Mr. Zingarelli had a duty to return the unearned fees. He had a duty to get Benny's file back to him. He had all kinds of things out there that he needed to take care of with regard to Benny, which he did not do. His questions about how many hours he actually worked, frankly, we were trying to determine actually how much he should have been paid. And in the process, he gave us explanations, the taped conversation with Benny Matthews that he worked 14 hours. He told Avery Friedman he worked 17. He told Relator's office he worked 33 and a half. He testified at the hearing that he did at least 17 hours worth of work. But yet there was nothing in that file. Nothing but Benny Matthews' file of stuff that he brought and David Bilbock's notes. The complaint was drafted by Dan Close, not Larry Monroe. The filing fee was paid by Dan Close. In this case, let's talk about the sanction for just a brief period of time. As previously has been stated, Mr. Zingarelli has been disciplined twice before by this court. The second discipline is perhaps one of the most instructive cases with regard to what can and cannot be an attorney fee agreement. It has, frankly, many things about it that are very instructive as far as what attorneys should tell their clients with regards to fee agreements. It is not just something, as Mr. Zingarelli dismissed it, that occurred because of Dan Close. That's not it at all. In fact, the facts were totally stipulated in the case. There wasn't even a hearing. So that's his second discipline. His first discipline is the 2-year suspension. And we should note that this court specifically noted that some of the misconduct was caused by his bipolar disorder and some of it was not. His violation of 2107A2, this court specifically found, had nothing to do with his bipolar disorder. This is his third discipline. The Board of Commissioners found 10 violations of disciplinary rules on 3 different counts and unanimously recommended that he be disbarred. That's Relator's position. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Zingarelli, you've saved a little over a minute of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Since I only have a minute to try to decide how to professionally execute me, I think that's what's most important. Mr. Stibbs sold $37,000. I was a couple months late returning $900 to Benny Matthews. I think there's a huge difference there. The complaint was drafted, as you stated, by Dan Close. It was drafted by Dennis McGuire. He spent 8 hours drafting the complaint. The sanction should get the remaining seconds. It's totally inappropriate. It's inappropriate to disbar a lawyer who has a mental disease. It is totally inappropriate to violate public policy contained in the Americans with Disabilities Act. It's totally inappropriate when you compare my conduct to that of Tom Phillips or the double murderer that's still practicing in Ohio, some of these other people, all the cases they cited, the only disbarment and the only sanctions were where there was lying to clients, not doing the work, neglecting things, and like that. I've always done a good job of representing my clients. I've always been respectful to the courts. I've never been held in contempt for having been punished. And I really think that, as I stated in my opening, 2 wrongs don't make a right. You're wrong when you put me in the street for 2 weeks, please don't be wrong by taking my license away. In the words of Isaiah, who was Christ's favorite prophet, do not harm the bruised reed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zingarelli. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please, your report.
All right.